So, anybody have any questions? Yeah. Well, what we'd like you, those that are going to respond, please rephrase the question so it'll be recorded.
Address one of us or all of us, and then we'll repeat the question, and everyone gets to share it.
I have 100 questions.
Fair enough.
We're up from Maricopa County, or we're a county formerly people in Arizona. We're forming a food policy coalition. And I haven't heard any mention of that. And I haven't heard any mention of city government or parish government, or health departments, or kind of getting involved. So is it because they're not interested, or you haven't engaged in a certain creation of relationship with a more local government?
Okay.
Sure, so I'll paraphrase the question. Just, I guess, what does it mean involved in a parish, both local and city government, and combat issues in the city, something like that? Yeah. So, the map that I showed about the grocery stores actually was generated from a report from the New Orleans Food Policy Advisory Committee. The city has been a really amazing partner. The city actually put together two pretty innovative pots of money. That was used in financing the Refresh project. They created a fresh food retail initiative, which is modeled after Pennsylvania's fresh food financing initiative that the National Healthy Food Finance Initiative program was modeled after as well. They put a pot of money together using SBATs or CDBG dollars. So that money was used in our project, as was a commercial order revitalization fund. So the city's definitely been a champion and a partner in the project, both on sort of the executive side, administrative side, and also the city council officially chartered the Food Policy Advisory Committee, which Carl sat on. And we do this conversation, and Mark and Bell was actively involved second harvest. So I think they released three reports. The first was about food access. The second is
Healthy
Corner Stores. And then Whole Food. And I think it kind of went defunct for a little while, but then as Carl and I were talking about today, I think it's getting resuscitated. But it's been highly effective, I think. I think there's been movement on all of the issues that they've released before time.
Sure. There's a grant program in place for the city. We actually advocated for a statewide program this past legislative session, which was a particularly difficult one to be looking for money because we had made a session with a $1.6 billion deficit. So we were able to, we have these kind of money, which our governor ended up drawing out in the after session. So we'll be back at it next time. For a statewide program, because we know that food access isn't just an issue in New Orleans, it's not just an issue in urban communities, it's also a tremendous issue in rural communities. And for us, we see it as something, certainly food access, but also a quality of life issue for farmers. How can we expect and how can we ask people to go and see agricultural fields if they have to drive two times over to go to a grocery store? I mean, it's just ridiculous that farmers are even growing soybeans or strawberries don't have access to fresh healthy food, especially when Louisiana's economy is dependent on agriculture. Agriculture is huge here. So that's the state of our program. The city has been very supportive. There was a new policy advisory committee that was started. I'm trying to remember how long.
Seven, maybe.
And each year they get two different initiatives. And we're seeing this in food policy council across the country that it can get off to strong starts, but oftentimes, it's those who are, I'm sure, understand well, have offended as they're trying to carve out their schedules to devote to this. So I think the will is definitely there. It's just the government and this work within wanting to be inclusive and trying to be cautious about next steps and things to take on.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Jackson also has a food policy council that is ramping up its activity now, and the mayor's office has been really supportive of Dr. Eric's project and our efforts to expand food access in Jackson.
Right, and Jeff, with that too, we're really working a lot with our university. One of the things that we're doing, we're trying to utilize those available, USDA, NRCS, Natural Resources. education, which is so important to a lot of things. And for us, it's finding out and letting people know we have an access to what's available, to let the community understand what's there. And our part, of course, is working more with the agricultural side, getting the farmers in position so that what they're growing and how they grow is important. So we're looking at all that, utilizing what we have existing. Hopefully those dollars are already there. We're really getting behind people that are supposed to be doing some things and not. They have the dollars, so that they have the knowledge, and we're one of the ones who say, okay, we have it, let's do something with it. And let's bring this partnership, this coalition together. We've worked in an avenue. A lot of times things are out there, but we won't know now. So we're really wanting to utilize more of our private sector and our government entities and communities together. I think that's what makes everything click, is understanding and knowledge and access to knowledge and to utilize it.
And you had a question?
I want to come to Arizona. Call me,
I just want to thank you guys for sharing your information and your experience for the over months. I have two questions. Well, how do you guys deal with your patients? One, when you're so close to you, don't have to worry about that. And you're going to go home with it all the time. And then I have a question about fruit.
Thank you. and also how to correct substitutes in a, you know, for the common for the region. But what's cool about it is it's a teaching, it's a course, but they also have an outreach component. So the tree supers, after they finish their class, they have a, you know, kind of a community service component to the class. And so we will be partnering with them on how to choose those trees and how to maintain those trees once we're able to get the fruit source on site.
I think that's my question, especially on fruit trees. I need to exchange this plug. For all the regulators that are out there and all that knowledge that you have, we're looking to utilize even more. What we're trying to do, not just with our farms and farmers in general, especially the small farmers that we're working with, is to identify, as you said, the proper or the right trees or plants, fruit to actually put it in place. We're working with the mad scientist, we have some of them that us, from the universities to make sure that the soil is conducive for what we're looking to grow, as well as the forest and growing good things, how can we utilize it. In Mississippi, water is not a problem. Some of our soil and clay is, depending on our pH. So we're utilizing, again, the universities, our extension programs, to make sure that when we put something in place, that it's there long enough and be able to have a picture of it, not just fly by night, and have something that's solid. But again, it's changing soil. All the great knowledge, and any great little vendor out there that cares to come into this administration, call them.
Also, what we're interested in terms of the teaching space, everybody knows can grow oranges and lemons and grapefruit and figs in Southern Louisiana, but what we're interested in doing is kind of showcasing agricultural tropical climate. Some of the, you know, the wider variety of things that you can grow in the backyards in Michigan that we can even, you know, cultivate. So, yeah, we work with Lee Ralph, is our parish extension agent, and he's also has been a fantastic resource to us. So, yeah, thanks for excited about getting that project going.
Well, I think about fruit. Sorry, fruit getting involved. Fruit is this wonderful gateway drug to healthy eating. I don't have numbers on our list, but we definitely see shopping counts at the market go up when we have fruit because it's something that kids will eat. It's sweet. People know what to do with it. It takes less prep time. It takes less day cooking. You can pack lunches. So that's something, just the more fruit we can get in markets, the more successful we are. I mean, we look through, and if people come in and they don't see fruit, oftentimes they'll turn around and walk out. So, yeah, any good work that you're doing and whatever we can do to increase local production here, we're all for.
Here, to comment. I actually sell it. Farmers market for a farm called Vintage Garden Farm, which is a nonprofit that all the farmers are actually folks with disabilities, and they're all the farmers and produce beautiful produce. But I sit next to the peach farmers. It's a port. It's a port of folks. The Jeff Mom is everybody that deserves to work. But even if no one's on the market on this day, there's just this kind of halo around the peaches of the folks.
Any other questions?
Yeah. I just want to make one comment. Those of you that aren't from here, we get about 6 inches of rain a year in Bethard. So that's a lot of rain. You may get 6 inches in an afternoon.
There was a question.
So, you just get used to it. Yeah, a question?
Thank you for your question, and I'll rephrase it. Did we have to do a lot of, was there any strong interest around our side, or did we have to kind of ramp up the outreach to make that happen? I think it speaks to what Jeff was saying in the previous presentation, that if you build it, they won't necessarily come. If you build it, they will come almost. I think it's a little bit, we definitely have was in response to the fact that the community said, community members, community partners said that they wanted this to exist on site. We had a lot of excitement going leading up to the building. We had the gardens were completely volunteer built. So we've had garden buildings several weekends leading up to the garden being built, and we had many weekends, 15 to 20 volunteers per day coming out and helping us. But that is to say that we did a lot of outreach for that. We had a lot of communication, and we're fortunate enough to have this rent partner to the word out. But it really is about communicating what's going on. So when we started programming, there was definitely that beach interest that had been accumulating over time, but we've been very aware that, you know, some folks use social media and all of that, and that is something that we use, but we have to be aware that the community that we are particularly in may not be using social media as a primary way to gather information. So we've done a lot of county engagement to get this to where it is now, and we continue to do so. And because we want everybody who has the potential to use the site to know that it's there. Max is on, whose picture it may be, whose picture was up there on the page that I just did. But so I actually met Max first because I was out there hammering away one afternoon before the opening in October, and he just rode up on his bike and he said, "Hey, I heard that there was going to be a party." He was referencing the opening community party that we were going to be having a few weeks later. And I said, "Yeah, there's going to be a party. Tell your family, tell your brothers and sisters you can come on up." And he said, "Well, aha, if there's going to be a party, I better help your family. I better help you, prepare for it." So that's really how I met those kids, because they just rode up on the bike and said, "Hey, we want to be involved." And that's what we are most dedicated to gardeners. And we also have, we've done pretty diligent and pointed outreach to the Latino community that is directly around the project and in the city. So we have our kids garden program coordinator. She's Latino. She's first generation in this country, and she also is. She's bilingual, she's fluently bilingual. So she's done a lot of outreach to the Latino community, and as well as we have another part of our program is the community outreach community, or community, what's it called? Community outreach committee. Sorry, all these communities that aren't continual coalitions. So that was another part of our programming that we really wanted to make that piece of two-directional feedback that was programming. So we wanted to be able to get the word out about what we're doing on site, but also hear back in a meaningful way about what kind of programs people want to see on site and how we can do that in the best way. So in our community outreach committee, we've been doing specific Latino outreach within that. We have some really great folks who are resources for that, and we've had a really great turnout of the specifically Spanish speaking and non-English speaking community to be able to feel empowered to come and participate in our programming. So that is becoming a really big focal point of our outreach. And I was going to say that to have a platform for folks' voice to be heard. So that's something I'm really working on, moving forward.
I mean, you got it.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, my name is Emily. You talked about the reflection program. Do you see gender differences in participation? Is it more men coming than men?
Sure. We don't have the research in yet. It's been it was part of a 3-year grant that when it started, so we'll be looking through that. I will say that our shopping base is much more female. So in we have 4 different markets, and the numbers are a little different for each one, but typically we're looking at either a 60-40 split or a 70-30 split.
Other ways.
They can move to our place a couple blocks away, and it was not mother per se. It definitely took convincing. They appreciated the vision, but it was definitely something where they had to realize just how beneficial I think the partnership would be. And now they're some of the best advocates for the whole project, and they're in many ways integral to what we're doing there. Connecting culinary nutrition education to the aspects. But that, that was a vision, but it was, something that definitely was a little bit of a coaxing. Other things were no brainer, with the farm, it's not that it was easy to have, make that happen, and we're insurance issues that we had to get out of our development partner that we're like a over-insured small nonprofit that was, I could do a skydiving probably on my, general liability insurance. Right now. But anyway, I guess the big takeaway for me was that it was iterative. And sort of snowballed over time, and it was really just the way that we, said sort of like come one, come all. This position is growing and changing over time. At some point, we're all going to have to make a decision about who's in or out of the at least on site as a project. But we've always kept that sort of open table, sort of a format for everybody, whether they're Whole Foods or a backyard gardener. Yeah.
And I'd like to add that I think that it's been so successful because the folks around the table really wanted to be there just inherently, and it's not for a grant or because they were mandated to be there because of some whatever work they're doing. It's a genuine partnership of folks who are truly coming together to collaborate, and I think that makes all of the difference in the coalition. Everyone is willing to fill in the gap for each one. I'm just basically a two-person organization, and for example, the Shoemaker Organ Center, they have opened up their doors and given me a lot of access to the resources that they have, in a truly genuinely collaborative manner. I think that it's all about the people, and I think that.
Anybody else have any questions? I have a question for Meredith, actually, about the whole city. You're working in the refresh project, but what about the other parts of the city? You're going to Baltimore, you're going to Chicago, and is there a plan to develop other neighborhoods? Because not everybody can come to that project within the city.
So one of our partners who's not here tonight is Jim Winko from the 9th Ward Backyard Gardeners Network. So we have a partner project in the 9th Ward as well as the projects that are here around Refresh. Mark and Arbella, the Farmers Market Prescription Program, actually serves a large part of the city.
We have four markets,
so we're Tuesday for uptown, Wednesday for the first quarter, Thursday for the city, and Saturday for downtown. And we draw a big broad range, particularly on Saturday because the time is being on the weekend for that one. And the prescription program is at the Percolin, which is right near the Refresh Project, but also Dollar Security, which is uptown in the Charlton neighborhood, and then also the location down in the Hotwater.
So our main focus is on neighborhoods that have traditionally had very low access to fresh, healthy food. And so that's our primary focus in Jackson as well. Through Dr. Harris' project, we're focused in northwest Jackson, but we're looking at expanding that project into South Jackson. So basically, when we find community partners in the city, we really look for partners who, like Dr. Bears, are leaders who inspire and reflect the community being served, and are serving neighborhoods where, I think when we say fresh food access, it can be a little abstract. I talked to a neighborhood resident in the 9th Ward, and it takes her 3 hours round trip, 2 bus transfers, and sometimes bus is late, and sometimes she misses the transfer. So she has to coordinate 5 different city bus schedules to get her transfers to go go to a Walmart for groceries. So that means whenever she needs to go grocery shopping, she has to schedule 3 hours just for transportation, and that doesn't include time to grocery shop. So I think that's the kind of, the neighborhood where that's the situation is where Whole City's focused, and wherever there are really grassroots, community-led, community-driven projects that engage the community in building not just the local food system. I think when we talk about local food, it's often the agricultural area that surrounds the city, but we're really trying to invest in and support and grow and expand community food systems, farms that are right in the neighborhood. In Englewood, there's a, on the south side of Chicago, there's a land trust that will lease for $1 a year, will support a group of people as small as 2 or 3 families to convert an abandoned and blighted city lot into a community garden that serves as a healthy food, but also a gathering place. Community gardens not only support the community by providing fresh healthy food, but also a safe gathering place. The garden that Jane Romano revitalized in the 9th floor of Brook City was a site for illegal trash dumping, and a lot of crime happened around there. And there's been national research that shows that community gardens not only reduce toxic waste dumping, illegal trash dumping, they also reduce injury rates. There's a reduction in accidents. There's a reduction in violent injuries as a result of person-to-person violence, all because a community garden comes in and takes over a space and converts it into a space that's oxygen-producing and has all kinds of properties and qualities that cities need and benefit from. So, sorry, that was a long-winded answer.
Right. Yeah, you have a question.
Are there any initiatives like the one you mentioned in New Orleans?
Yeah, what about providing
group, if you could show and you put those back into
to work. We can actually put something on them that's going to produce some new income for the city or for that area or for the community.
I mean, we got to try to get the younger generation to work the garbage. I mean, that's right. I get to occasionally just speak sometimes. You can make more money like in a room this size if you go work at McDonald's. You know, they all want stuff. So, I mean, that's what you got to show them. It's like you work, you know, you let my money go.
I do a lot of that, utilizing young people, especially high school. Organizations that's already in place, football teams, basketball teams, boys groups, to look at, tell them and show them how they can make money, and also the access to understanding what's available to them and how they can do it. Agriculture, as you know, everybody thinks it's rural, but a lot of inner city, a lot of urban, now they ever have access as well. So that's one of the things I'm doing, utilizing the youth, because a lot of them out there that need to balance and need an opportunity, and the experience that you have and others have, that's what we need to do, open some of those doors. But the communities that are out there, especially all these nonprofits that have their mission is to help economic development and help the communities, this is where we really start, as well as utilize our faith-based entities to give to some of these young people. They are there. We have them, we have the need to just show them how to do it, and it works.
And I'd like to add, if there are extension agents or other organizations that are really help with training, I think that a really big need is training folks on how to use small spaces intensively, deliberately, especially in urban areas. A lot of those training, a lot of those business trainings are geared towards
if anybody would like to just mention any projects that you're involved with that would be related or of interest to the group. And the other thing is the local foods. I know some people are leaving, but the local foods working group is meeting. We need to think about for Atlanta what we're going to be doing in Atlanta in terms of workshops. If there's a farm tour, an urban local food systems tour. So think about that for those of you that will or will not be at the local foods working group meeting on Friday.
Yeah, Friday 10 to 11. It's Friday morning.
Does anybody have any unit question or a comment?
So the question was, how are we addressing our water issues? And it's tough. Finding land with affordable water is a whole looking thing for farmers, for urban farmers. Of course, irrigation is the only way to really do it. If you're tapping into a municipal water source, we have a number of different ways that irrigation can happen. We do some flood irrigation, it's kind of crazy. There's land that's in the zone that has access to this flood irrigation where it's like super cheap, in the middle of the desert. It's kind of a funny thing. But salinity is a really big problem for us. So drip irrigation has that limitation where you're sure you're only applying a small amount of water to the salinity in the our soil pH is at 8.4 is about average. So we really have to be careful with our irrigation management to apply enough water so you're not permanently destroying the soil.
Are you looking at aeroponics, this new way of growing, or are you looking at new ways of living where you can utilize the water? And then you work with just all of our conservation community. Aeroponics is something I think we should be looking at more, and I'm hoping to see more research on that as well as aqua, but especially aeroponics.
So the question was about, are we just referring to aeroponics? There's some that's still fairly technical, I think. It's, I don't know,
summer, we were growing the top in, I'm using that water stuff.
Sure.
So that's a very big issue. We're seeing a lot of that popping up in schools, but some climate issues too. To afford to take big enough for the water temperatures. Right now, it's 112 degrees. So I don't think people
complain about the heat here. Right. Well, we have 4 minutes. We want to be keeping on time. Anybody have any? Yes.
I was trying to encourage you guys. Bio-intensive farming.
What's that?
Bio-intensive? Yeah. Have you thought of the planting? I teach a lot of that. So you have your low sweetest, but you have herbs and flowers planted around it, so therefore in that 2 to 3 foot space you have 3 actual rows, and you can use the pests. So you've got kind of like a 3-way space, pests and flowers. Like I said, I'm not a really good person, but I've done different community gardens and nonprofit actually in Tulsa. We had low income single family that were in transition from homelessness to getting back on their feet. And it's really interesting trying to get the kids to actually taste things. And I had one, I've ruined a couple of 2-year-olds who actually had blueberries right off of the bush and would not eat the Walmart blueberries. And their parents were very frustrated with me. And I had an 8-year-old who pitched a fit because I did not produce a strawberry in February.
Yeah.
And she did not understand that when there wasn't a flower, we had to go through the fruits and it had to go through ripening. And I said, fine, let's go get her Walmart. And she said, there's a huge bit of a lot of she just gave me one. But I actually have a privilege of actually working at the Oklahoma State Tenant Garden. And I actually talk fruit and vegetables on a daily basis to people as I manage and daily work in the fruit and vegetables. And so it really is a hard part of water and other issues and knowledge. And I think there's a huge disparity, not just between people who are doing it and the educators and the institutions, but also the public. And like I mentioned earlier, people who are growing it from seeds sell it to the big box stores, and then they ship it to wherever it goes. But it's not necessarily the tomatoes that you should be growing in Oklahoma are the ones that are ending up there, and the ones in Michigan or to Florida or wherever. And that's a really frustrating topic, not just in fruit, but also in vegetables. So we're trying to grow our own food, but we're shooting ourselves in the foot by giving 7 months of failure just by the hanging and all kind of things. Horses.
And conversely, don't feed a 4-year-old a little Spanish radish, like a black radish. It's so hot that they'll never ever eat anything that comes out of the radish. They'll get to cry one time. I'm burning them with a hot radish. They don't ever forgive you.
Never.